Welcome to This Day in Pottery History, a series of brief observations, meditations, vignettes, and editorials about the back roads and byways of pottery history that helped shape the pottery world as we know it today, here on this very day in pottery history. I'm your host, Stephen Earp. For images and reading lists associated with these narratives, visit StephenEarp.com/podcasts. And now, let's get going. Episode 48, The Name of the Game. Suppose your pottery shop has a pretty good reputation. Suppose your neighborhood is full of pretty good pottery shops, maybe 30 or so. Suppose you all make pretty much the same stuff. And suppose you even formed a collective of sorts to help everyone manage business. Now, suppose that neighborhood covers only 2 or 3 city blocks. And suppose that reputation means an entire continent eagerly standing in line to buy your neighborhood's handiwork. About 340 years ago, those neighborhood potteries were in the town of Delft. That collective was the Guild of St. Luke, and that reputation ruled Europe for almost 200 years. A question arises. Why didn't those Dutch potteries sign their work? With such high demand, and in such tight quarters, 2 or 3 city blocks? Why did they opt for anonymous group identity over individual recognition? Today, we immediately imagine signing our work as basic marketing, branding. A signature on a pot seems the most obvious way of saying, "Hey, I'm over here." But that's just our perspective. Delft potteries ultimately did sign their work. Their dominance in Europe, begun during a vacuum left by a prolonged civil war in China with its curtailing of export porcelain production, was being challenged. The war had ended, and porcelain was back. Also, other European potteries were getting serious about their own faience, porcelain, and creamware. This competition threatened Delftware's very existence. It was sink or swim, and so they signed, and most ultimately sank. But another reason why they began signing pots tells us perhaps as much about ourselves as about them. A faint but fundamental shift had happened. The Delftware craze required a consistent commercial ceramic materials supply network. Nobody could do that much production while digging their own clay. Standardized materials ultimately meant easy replication of anything, anywhere, at any time. Style, as a defining aspect of tradition in pottery, would no longer be understood as a local distinction tied to a specific geographic and geologic place with unique communally shared values. Style would now become a showcase for individual expression based, essentially, on looks. What does all this mean? Maybe not much. Those events weren't the beginning of that change in perception, nor its end. Still, the beginnings of the factory system in ceramics was a writing-on-the-wall moment that, ironically, propelled individual identity over collective expression. Thanks for listening. And until next time, remember that cautionary quote from old Benjamin Franklin himself. Think of these things from whence you came, where you are going, and to whom you must account.